Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at OffbeatOregon.com. This is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. Today I've got a story for you about a homesteader whose plan to get extra land involved bigamy and murder. It seems our hero married this lady to get title to her land claim, but then she found out he had another wife in Duffer. This story was first published on February 5th of 2012. Here we go. One February day in 1904, a 30-something man got off the train in Hood River and hired a buggy at the local livery stable. He wanted to be driven to the homestead ranch of a man named Norman Williams, and he wanted to bring along a shovel. Bert Stranahan, the owner of the livery stable, was happy to oblige. Business was, after all, business. The shovel was a strange request, but he couldn't see any reason to say no. When they got to the place, it had clearly been abandoned for some time. The visiting man, who said his name was George Nesbitt, poked around the buildings with the shovel a little bit, and then, as Stranahan eyed him dubiously, he started digging inside a chicken coop in the yard. He dug all day, 4 feet, 5 feet, 6 feet down. He was looking for his mother and his sister. Nesbitt's sister's name was Alma, and she had known Williams back in Iowa before she came out to Oregon. They'd probably talked of marriage, because after Williams moved to the Hood River Valley to file his homestead claim, they wrote letters back and forth, and he urged her to come out and file a homestead claim on the adjacent parcel. She finally did in 1899. Then her mother, 68-year-old Louisa Nesbitt, came out too. And for a while, the three of them wrote happy, open-air homesteader letters back to Iowa, relating how they were all working together to build a house and a barn and various other improvements that would make their land productive and homey. And then all of a sudden, the letters stopped. The family wrote to Williams, and he replied that the women had left, that Alma had thrown him over for a younger man. Beyond that, he was very uncommunicative. The family posted notices, contacted authorities, offered rewards. Nothing. Finally, in desperation, George bought a railroad ticket and came to Hood River. At the farm, something had seemed to guide him unerringly to that half-built hen house and kept him going all day digging into its floor. And at twilight, he finally found something at the bottom of the hole he'd dug, a piece of burlap sacking stained with what looked like blood and several long silver hairs. At least now he knew. Back at the Dalles, Nesbitt went straight to the county courthouse and reported his find and his suspicions. He swore out a warrant for Williams' arrest, and Wasco County Deputy District Attorney Fred Wilson was assigned to the case. Williams, when tracked down in Washington State, was affable and cooperative and apparently unconcerned. In jail, he made no attempt to raise bail. "It'll all come out all right," he'd say with an easy smile. Unlike all the previous correspondents, Alma's last letter home had been mailed from a boarding house in Portland, not from the homestead. So Wilson and Nesbitt went there and talked to the landlord. They learned that the women had stayed there from February 8th to March 8th. March 8th was the postmark date on the letter. March 8th was also the day a Hood River livery stable rented a buggy and team to Williams and two women, one young and pretty, the other middle-aged, with long silver hair. Assuming this was Alma and her mother, that would have been the last time anybody other than Williams saw either one of them. But the livery stable owner did see Williams again, returning the buggy and team, alone. Acting on a hunch, Wilson crossed the Columbia and checked public records. At the time, Washington's marriage laws were looser than Oregon's, and many eloping couples ran to Vancouver to get married. Sure enough, Wilson found that Norman Williams and Alma Nesbitt had tied the knot before a justice of the peace there, 6 months before Alma had disappeared. This was particularly interesting because a record search in Oregon showed he was still married to a woman in Duffer, whom he'd wed in 1898, the year before Alma came out. There were some other issues too, skeletons in Williams' closet, as it were. As it turned out, he'd been married not just once, but 6 times. Two of those wives had died of poisoning, and he'd served 3 years in the Nebraska State Pen for assaulting and nearly killing a sister-in-law. But Wilson found the real smoking gun at the land claim office. There he learned that Williams was under indictment for forgery. After Alma's disappearance, he'd brought in a document transferring title to Alma's homestead claim to him. And the clerk had been suspicious, so he'd sent back to Washington for a copy of the initial homestead claim forms. The signatures did not match. Clearly, Williams was in the process of trying to steal Alma's land. To the prosecutors, it all added up. Williams, wanting Alma's claim to add to his, sweet-talks her into marrying him and starts making plans to combine the parcels. But before that can happen, she learns he's been two-timing her, so she and her mother pack up and leave for Portland. He, having found out where they were, goes out and sweet-talks them into coming back to the ranch and then kills them both and cremates the bodies. Neighbors had reported an enormous bonfire on the ranch property at around that time. Having overlooked one piece of bloody burlap, he buries that and builds a chicken coop over it. Ironically, if he had not done this, it would have been long gone by the time Nesbitt arrived 4 years later. Well, this evidence and this story is fairly damning, but very circumstantial. That is, it was very circumstantial until an expert witness took the stand. This witness was Dr. Victoria Hampton, a chemist from Portland, one of the very first female scientists in Oregon and in the United States. Hampton testified that based on her forensic analysis, the blood on the burlap was human, and so were the hairs, that the hairs had been ripped out of the scalp before death. And on that note, the prosecution rested, but they'd presented more than enough. Norman Williams was hanged for the murder of his sixth wife and mother-in-law on July 21, 1905, in the last public hanging in Oregon history. He was 48 years old. By the way, there's more to this story, more interesting details than I have space to go into here. To get the full story, you'll want to pick up a copy of Stuart Holbrook's book, Murder Out Yonder. It's all there in Chapter 11. That's our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a series of live history shows, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone newsreader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple of other minor components, YouTube channel, stuff like that. Photographs and other visual goodies that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources for this story and about 250 other stories that have been written over the past 5 years about interesting history from the Beaver State. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details on that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for fun and to learn new stuff, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations. But if you enjoy Offbeat Oregon history and you'd like to support it, you can always pick up a copy of my book. If you enjoy the show, by the way, I can pretty much guarantee that you'll enjoy the book. It's called Wicked Portland. It was published by the History Press in 2012, and it's available at most community bookstores, or you can order a signed copy from the store link at offbeatoregon.com if you like. It sells for $20. Another way you can support Offbeat Oregon is by reviewing or rating the show on iTunes or Stitcher, or by sharing it with a friend. Finally, if you're ever in the neighborhood near Oregon State University, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of something in the library coffee shop and talk history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, and until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.